You're listening to 99.1 WQRT LP, and welcome to Radio Free Book Club for December 2023. I'm Ken Honeywell. I'm a writer and reader from Indianapolis. And yes, we're a little late this month, thanks mostly to COVID, but we're here, we're well, and today we're talking about a book that to me, at least, was a big surprise in more ways than one, beginning with the fact of its existence at all. It's America Fantastica, and it's the first novel in more than 20 years by Tim O'Brien, who's the author of Going After Cacciato, which won the National Book Award in 1978, also In the Lake of the Woods and others. He's perhaps best known for his book of linked short stories, The Things They Carried, which for me anyway, is kind of the definitive work of fiction about the war in Vietnam. His new book, America Fantastica, is something else again. It's a manic sort of satirical road trip novel that features bank robbery, murder, suicide, a toxic late-stage capitalism, a whole lot of lying, a whole lot more. So thank goodness we have a crack team of Radio Free Book Club members here to help us make sense of it all. And I would love for them to introduce themselves, starting with Jen Bingham. Hi. Jen.
Hello. I'm Jen Bingham. I'm a reader and writer from Indianapolis.
Thanks. Glad you're here.
Thank you.
I am Robin Beery, a writer and reader from Indianapolis, currently trying to do more of both.
Awesome. Good luck with that.
Thanks.
And finally,
wrapping up, Steve Woods. I am an avid reader. I want to write more. Finding time is tough, but I'm a financial advisor in my real job.
Yeah, awesome. Well, thanks, everybody. Thanks for being here. And before we get going, I just want to remind everyone that while we will be definitely flinging around some opinions here, this is a book club. It's not a book review. And that means we will definitely be spoiling this book. So if you don't mind some opinions and don't mind the spoilers, keep listening. But if you're sure you're going to read America Fantastica and you don't want to know what happens, you want to come back and listen another time, which is easy because you can find this and all the episodes of Radio Free Book Club on Mixcloud, on Spotify, Apple, Amazon, just about anywhere you stream podcasts. So if you want to read America Fantastica, go listen to some of WQRT's other great programming and join us at a later time. Okay, America Fantastica. Let's talk about it, but let's first talk about Tim O'Brien. Who is familiar with Tim O'Brien? What kind of relationship do you have with Tim O'Brien? And what were your expectations for the book, Jen?
Really just reading The Things They Carried in college, I think, in a first-person nonfiction class. And it was great. I haven't read it since, but I thought it was Fantastica, so I was expecting this book to be Fantastica.
Yeah.
Too.
Yeah.
Pretty much the same. I've read The Things They Carried a number of times. Love that book. I started reading Going After Cacciato around the same time that I first read Things They Carried, and got partway through it and can't remember why I got derailed, but that's not uncommon for me. So it's not Tim O'Brien's fault necessarily.
Yeah. Yeah. Steve.
I've read everything that he's written. I had a professor at Wabash College, Toby Herzog, that has a good relationship with O'Brien and has written a biography on him. So I've loved O'Brien forever, and I entered into this book suspicious because it had been 20 years, and I loved Things They Carried,
yeah,
and Going After Cacciato so much. And I, you know, even some of the others, the Tomcat and Love, I think Nuclear Age was his self-described worst book.
Yeah, yeah.
But I really liked them all, and I thought this was a pretty big departure from the O'Brien that I knew. But
yeah,
but it was good. I liked it.
Yeah,
ultimately.
I thought it was a very big departure, and I haven't read everything of Tim O'Brien, but I definitely have read The Things They Carried more than once. Going After Cacciato, I read. Robin, I felt like I did finish it, but I got bogged down in it. In the Lake of the Woods, I remember reading, I thought was awfully good also. And really, the things they carried, I just so good to me. It's just a pretty amazing book. So I really kind of had high expectations for this. So, yeah, what did everyone think about this? What are your general impressions? Jen, you want to start us off?
Sure. I didn't like it at all, really. I thought that the writing was good, and at times the narrative carried me along, but I would like turn a page and say to myself, or aloud, I live by myself, but I said aloud, how are there 200 fucking pages left in this book? So it wasn't my favorite. It showed skill and had some good things that I liked. The only people I liked were the woman sheriff and her eventual husband, I would say.
Wanda June. And Elmo.
Elmo, right, yeah.
Right, or Elmore, depending on.
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Do you think it's an Elmore Leonard?
Before Elmo or Elmore even entered the scene, I was pretty much from the start thinking, geez, this feels a lot like an Elmore Leonard novel. Mm-hmm. And I haven't read a ton of Elmore Leonard, although actually I've read more Elmore Leonard than I have Tim O'Brien. but I would say that, you know, overall, you know, Elmore Leonard goes down easy. You know, it's a light beer, kind of. A good light beer.
Yeah. And this one?
Wow. Well, that's a good question. This is like one of those craft beer clone. Clone is the wrong word. But it's some kind of beer masquerading as another kind of beer, I think.
Okay, we'll get into what that
means.
But
it still has its qualities, I would say.
And I misspoke. It's not Wanda June, it's Wanda Jane. Wanda Jane Epstein. And Elmo Hive, or Elmore, depending on which persona you wanted to deal with. Steve, what'd you think?
I didn't like it as I was reading it. Again, because I think I was looking at it through the lens of how much I loved some of his other books. I was suspicious about why he's finally writing this. He had a child really late in life, and he even wrote a dad book. I think that was his last one. But the more I thought about it and kind of let it settle over me, the more I liked it. I think he was doing things in this book that come off as maybe cheap tricks, that the more I thought about it, it shows more depth, I think, than is readily available on the page. So, and that could be just the fact that I want to love it, right?
Yeah,
because I really like him. So I may be connecting dots that weren't necessarily there, but ultimately, I liked it. And, you know, to jump ahead would be one that I would recommend for people to give a try to.
Yeah. Steve, I wish I felt that way. I did not like this book at all. I didn't like anything about it. I read it twice because I you know, had to prepare for this show, and everything we do here, I read twice. I hoped I had missed something. I don't think I did. I just did not enjoy anything about it. I mean, I don't think the writing was terrible, but I'm not sure what it was actually in service of. So, you know, let's talk about that. So clearly this is a satire, right? I mean, that's what it is. Does it work as satire? Robin, what do you think?
It's not a very keen satire, I would say. It feels like this could have satirized American life between the years of like 1972 and today. Like, honestly, like, yeah, since from Nixon to our current, you know, scoundrel in chief, former scoundrel in chief. Like that's kind of the backdrop for me of this entire book. So, but you know, it takes place in 2019, right? Which is a very specific time, 2019, 2020.
Right.
And that was kind of my main thing that it wasn't even the thing that spoiled the book for me the most. Like that might be just the fact that, like, to some of your points, I never quite knew what all this was in service of. But the weirdest thing to me was just that it seemed like these characters sometimes were really 20 to or 15 to 20 years older than they were described as being in the narration. Like they just, like one of the main characters, Angie, I think she's in her mid to late 20s or something like that, right? Mm-hmm. She feels to me like maybe late 30s, mid 40s mm-hmm. woman. And Boyd Halverson, her kidnapper, and then later love interest, which is another thing that I think we could get into a little more depth into if we wanted to, whether that's really realistic. But he's supposed to be what, 50, maybe late 40s, 50. Well, he's a liar.
He's a liar, so we don't know. He says he's somewhere between 49 and 53. Right. It seems.
But I feel like he read to me as maybe mid 60s, maybe even early 70s. And so it felt like maybe he started writing this book maybe a long time ago and then just kind of updated it without really rethinking any of the references, you know, yeah. like lining them up with the people and, you know, bringing in anything to sort of identify them as being of their time. So it felt just very kind of disconnected from reality. And yet it had like the sheen of a realistic novel. Mm-hmm. It's like set during, you know, our time.
Yeah. Although to me, it didn't seem like there was anything realistic about it. I mean, I didn't find anything that felt like it was actually true to life.
Yeah, it felt, rather than a satire, I would say it felt more like an absurdist, like, exaggeration of how this one person views America, perhaps.
Yeah. Yeah, well, Steve, it seemed to go down a little easier for you. What did you get out of it? You think, you know, when you reflected on it, you got a little bit more out of it, you thought?
Well, I mean, there were certainly parts, for instance, the bank robbery, that I just can't foresee any situation where even an owner of a small town bank would be able to steal for that long. So, and nor would a robbery not come up on the federal radar pretty fast. And they would have these guys in a second. So I think it kind of required some suspension of disbelief within that and just kind of going along. And I really feel like as a reader, I was a bottle in a river just kind of floating to wherever he wanted. And I tried not to get too bogged down, which is why when I was reading it, I was frustrated by some of that. But I think he's trying to just serve a larger purpose and shine a light on kind of where he sees America at this time. And the story doesn't always do that service if you are looking for, you know, really tight plot. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of things that are just crazy to think that this group of what, four people could totally dismantle a mansion in Minnesota with very little trouble and get rid of all these things, like all these cars that people in this little Minnesota lake town are now driving and things like that. But I think it kind of served a, you know, that part I was thinking kind of a Robin Hood type thing even though they didn't have any virtue because they kept the money. But all of those things kind of served to make a statement in my estimation about what was kind of going on, and not so much it didn't flow very well.
Yeah, I think I just didn't find any of that. I mean, I think it's pretty clear what he's trying to do here. But I just didn't find very much insight in any of it. I mean, I felt like he was shining light on places that already had plenty of light on them. And maybe the one, interestingly, it just occurred to me while you're talking, Steve, the one thing that maybe I felt a little bit about like was around the bankers who at one point the main banker, Doug Cutterby, was telling somebody about, I think it was Cutterby, was telling somebody about how people don't look at their bank statements. People don't know how much interest they're supposed to be getting or what the fees are. And, you know, people don't know that stuff. And, you know, a dollar here and a dollar there adds up to hundreds of thousands of dollars over time. And I think that was at least something that felt true, that I didn't feel like I was kind of at the top of my mind anyway. But yeah, I just didn't feel like there was anything in here that I went, wow, that's very insightful. I guess the other thing I would say is I did read it a couple of times, and then, you know, just in the last day or so, I kind of leafed through it again. And if you look at the characters, it really seems to me, it seems like it should have been more interesting than it was. You know, you've got Boyd, also known as Junior, also known as Otis Birdsong, also known as Blackie. There's Angie, who was kidnapped. There was Boyd's wife, Evelyn. There was Teddy, the dead son. There was Randy Zapp, the murderer, and Angie's boyfriend, Jim Dooney, who is Evelyn's father, Calvin, his lover and hairdresser. There was Junius, who was Evelyn's husband and the CEO of all of Dooney's businesses. There were Cyrus and Carl, the dead henchmen. There was the truth teller seed in Fulda, which was, you know, Chubb and Dink O'Neill and Earl Fenstermacher, and it seemed to be, you know, that was, I forget what they called it, like it was a source seed or something like that. This was a place that actually made up the lies that were going to be distributed all across the country, and Boyd was kind of the one seemingly behind all of that. But there was, you know, Junius's factotum, Henry Speck. There was the cop, Toby, Hubcap Toby. Douglas and Lois, Wanda Jane, Elmo, Alvin in Minnesota, Ennie and Peggy. There was Boyd's parents. There was Hedda Toadhauser. You remember Hedda?
Mm-mm.
She was the fitness club owner.
Friend.
Wanda Jane's friend.
Oh, yeah,
too.
Okay. Yeah, I kind of liked her too.
Well, yeah, she was interesting, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then there was also Mel, the shoe salesman, who met an untimely death. And that's not even all the characters, but that, you know, kind of range of characters seems like it should be really fun. I just didn't have a lot of fun with it.
I didn't have fun either.
Yeah. Why do you think that was, Jen?
The preface really predisposed me to hate the book because I think prefaces are usually a bad idea, for one. And it just seems so pretentious and kind of referring to what you said, doing stuff that's already been done. And then those types of chapters sprinkled in, I didn't like.
Those lying chapters.
Yeah, I didn't like those at all. It just seemed like it was trying to be more than it was. And I think that's why I didn't like it. It seemed very, like, old white guy. No offense.
Yeah. No, I'm none taken. I mean, I really agree with you. And, either Robin or Steve said, it almost felt like something that was, you know, started, you know, 15, 20 years ago that, you know, kind of had to be updated with all the, you know, but it felt like, you know, without that whole lying contagion stuff, you know, it could have been, you know, published 15 years ago. Was there any part of the book, Robin, any part of the book you enjoyed more than any other?
Well, I think the, you know, the banking stuff was interesting. I mean, though those characters were terrible, the banker and his wife who co-managed the bank were just
horrible people.
Just awful, but it was compelling. And I guess, you know, unfortunately, it still feels pretty relevant. I don't know about the realism of his scheme of bilking people on their statements. I mean, people might not notice, but I'm sure auditors would see that kind of thing.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know if it's realistic, but at least it was something like, oh, yeah, I guess I never look at my interest
right,
from my bank, my 1% interest or whatever it is.
So they were interesting. And I mean, he was, you know, he was a real sociopath, like, you know, serial killer, basically. I mean, I think when you really look at it, you know, he killed his wife. He was plotting to kill Hedda, right?
Right.
And I think he'd killed someone before his wife, too, right?
Well, I mean, his wife killed Toby, but plotted it
that's
together.
Right, yeah, they plotted it together. Yeah, I mean, there was a lot to keep track. Mm-hmm. But yeah, I found that stuff rewarding. Like Jen, the interstitial stuff with the truth seed just felt tacked on to make it seem maybe more literary or something, where honestly these days I don't think you really have to try to be more literary. People are reading genre fiction now, so.
Yeah, for sure. Steve, what do you think?
Well, that part was very heavy-handed. It's like, in case you're not picking up on what I'm going to carve out a couple little chapters just to really drive this home to make sure you know that you know, kind of what's going on in the plot. You know, I guess I'd be curious to just know if, and Ken, you kind of mentioned it, are there any characters that you did like, and were any of these characters not liars, and do we agree that the sheriff is probably the most virtuous?
Yeah, Wanda Jane.
Or is it Elmo?
Or, you know, I mean, they were kind of in cahoots, right? I mean, Elmo was clearly a liar, right?
Yeah, so he didn't make much of an impression. I liked him. I liked how he showed up, but he didn't make the impression on me that Wanda Jane did. So I'd say she was the most virtuous.
Yeah. Alvin seemed, like, not super bright necessarily, but not deceptive.
Yeah, but he was also running a scam too, right?
Was he? Okay.
Yeah, I mean, he and Peggy or Edda or Eddie or whatever
true,
her name was. I mean, they were old scam partners.
God, yeah.
I liked Wanda. I mean, she was kind of late to the game, really. I mean, that whole side story of them trying to get the banker, Doug, was, you know, really late in the book. But I liked her, and I thought Hedda was interesting. It also bugged me that more than once Hedda mentioned to Doug or to somebody that they should, you know, look up her name and what it meant. I mean, as someone who had, you know, many years of undergraduate German, I knew what it meant. I mean, Tod means death, and Hauser means house. So, but I felt like there were a couple of other points in the book where kind of like, I felt Jen kind of like old white guy, like he threw out a couple of words, or I think Angie threw out a couple of words that were kind of like, yeah, you don't know what these words mean. You should look those up. It was kind of like, oh, okay. What, I mean, why do we need that? You know, you're Tim O'Brien, for goodness sake. So that kind of bugged me. So let's talk about the relationship between Boyd and Angie a little bit. The jacket blurb says, at the heart of the novel, amid a teeming cast of characters, obviously teeming cast, readers will delight in the tug of war between two memorable and iconic human beings, the exuberant savior of souls, Angie Bing, and the penitent but compulsive liar, Boyd Halverson. Robin, were you delighted? What did you think of their relationship?
I'll tell you. I mean, they were on the road together, so obviously we as the reader spent a lot of time with them. I could have been more annoyed. I certainly have been. So I liked them all right. I didn't really believe them as characters exactly because I felt like they weren't really true to what seemed to be their actual age. So that threw me off. And then the whole kidnapping, you know, and she's got a crush on him thing. I think you have to do more than just use that trope, which it is kind of a trope. I mean, if you really want to use it at this stage, I think you have to like make it believable somehow. And it didn't seem to me like it really, there was much effort or art into making that believable. Just yeah. Sort of like, well, I guess we're supposed to accept it. He's been flirting with her for a while, so, you know, I guess this thing exists.
Yeah, yeah. Was he flirting with her?
Or was she flirting with him? I can't remember what
the narrator
said.
She was flirting with him. Well, you know, she told that story. She told a very kind of weird story about how when she was in high school, when she was a high school gymnast, she had competed in like the state championship, and there was one event left, and it was the horse, the pommel horse, or I guess that's a vault in women's gymnastics. And she and the girl who was, you know, competing with her, that was her specialty. And she, Angie, hated the horse. Well, the girl won. She won the championship. But when they were in the locker room, Angie stole her trophy. And then she said, and, you know, I swore to myself, if I ever saw her again, I would give her that trophy back. And then she says something like, and you'll never guess what happened next, the next week at the bank. And Boyd says, like, the horse girl walked in and she says, no, that was the day I met you. And it was like, it was such a weird story with such a nothing payoff that I just felt like, oh, that feels like the whole book to me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, like the end of every chapter seemed like, I mean, it was like a weird, just like nonsensical ending to every chapter. And I can, maybe that's the point, Steve. I don't know. You know, maybe that's that thing that, you know, actually ties it all together, is the just absurdity of every bit of it.
So, you know, one of the things that I was thinking about is what put Boyd down this road initially.
Mm-hmm.
And I did really like the background of his family.
Mm-hmm.
And he had a mother that he was ashamed of.
Right.
And it was much easier for him to create a persona to deal with his reality that just got taken, you know, I think lies beget lies, right? And it just becomes part of his personality, and it's easier to make things up than to own who you are.
Right.
But does he have any qualities that you all found admirable? Like the death of his child when we find out. I mean, that was one thing that I was like, all right, this is something. I'm very interested in that, if anything, kept you flipping, you know, your right hand over to finish the book.
And you find out ultimately that it was his wife that had dropped, but he had taken the heat for that. And then that had even become part of his story, and he accepted that pain, even though it wasn't his. You know, is that admirable? Does that get him off the hook a little bit? I'm just curious to find out what everybody else thought about that.
That would have made a really good book. I mean, if that were the story, right? But it, I mean, that's one of the things that I feel in general about character revelations that come at the end of the story, right? You kind of string along someone's like dysfunction, and then you finally find out at the end what it was. It's always, to me, it's very seldom very interesting at that point, because you've been left in suspense the whole time. There's no time to kind of explore what that means. If he had led with that and explored like what happens to a man who, like, in his lie, but also in maybe in his own head, has taken the heat for this loss of his son all those years. That would be really interesting, but by the time it happened, I kind of just didn't believe it. I was like, well, he needed some reason, right, to want to kill himself on the steps of his father-in-law's house, and this was it. And I'm like, okay, if you say that's the equation, then that's fine, but at least we're like 20 pages from the end.
Yeah, I guess that was the other thing, to me at least, that was the surprise in the book, that he wasn't going out to kill Jim Dooney. He was going out to kill himself in front of Jim Dooney. But again, I don't know. I didn't feel super affected by that. I mean,
the only thing I liked about that was I felt like it explained Evelyn, who I liked Evelyn somewhat. She seemed like an interesting character.
She seemed level-headed, at least.
She did, yeah. I was having a hard time figuring out why Boyd, who I imagined as like a not very attractive person and probably elderly, like you said, rather than just 50s, like why were women basically fighting over him? It was odd.
Yes, I agree. And yeah, Steve, I don't know. I mean, I think I agree with Robin about that. I mean, that was interesting character development, I think, but in service of, again, of what? I didn't really understand what it was all supposed to be about. I mean, if we go from there and we then move into Boyd's professional life, it sounds like he was a really good reporter. I mean, it sounds like he actually took his job seriously and the reason he fell into all of the story is because Jim Dooney tried to ruin him because he was trying to expose all the horrible practices of Dooney's businesses. So, you know, the liar, the kind of unrepentant, mostly liar, who's lied about everything. I mean, there were long passages of all the lies he told about everything. You know, his life fell apart when he tried to tell the truth. So, I mean, I don't know quite what to make of that, but at least seemed somewhat interesting, like an interesting point. So I have a kind of a weird question, and it occurred to me, I think maybe after I'd read it, but definitely as I started reading it again, did anybody else feel like Boyd was America? Don't all answer at once. I kind of felt like that. And then toward the end of the book, I found this. Boyd felt responsible. In a way, he was responsible. Remarkable, he thought, how he had become his country, or how his country had become he. It was not so far-fetched, he speculated, to believe that he was the originator of it all, the liar of liars, the wellspring, the pharaoh of fantasy, a Johnny Appleseed, seeding falsehood from sea to boiling sea. I don't know what to make of that, but anybody else have any reaction to that?
It's interesting to think about. I definitely am not going to read this book again to examine that. But yeah, I didn't think of it while I was reading it, but maybe that explains some of the weirdness of the book.
Yeah. Anybody else? That strike anybody else at all?
I had not thought of it, I have to say.
What do you think about the whole, I mean, it seems like kind of the whole underlying theme of the book is that the whole problem with America is everybody is lying about everything. Does that seem fair? And is that, did you get that? And do you believe that?
I got that. I don't know if I believe that that's the problem with America. It's, we've got some liars running around and sometimes in positions of power. Maybe we lie to ourselves about what our country is.
I think the big problem with America is that everyone wants to believe in things that and never alter those beliefs. We want to lock in our ideas of what all this is about and what's important and live that way until we die. And actually, but we'd never want to die. Either. That's maybe the other thing that is wrong with America. But that might be a different conversation, though. I don't think it has that much to do with this book. But
yeah, I don't know. What do you think, Steve?
It's interesting. I didn't pick up on that. But the... I suppose the idea, kind of to Robin's point, is we, I think, as a country, have a very steadfast vision of what we are, regardless of what's going on, mm-hmm. and that we are always in a position of righteousness. And maybe everybody felt individually in this story that they were doing or their actions were somehow virtuous because it was always leading to their own personal satisfaction, like their needs above everybody else's. And, you know, on a larger scale, do we govern that way? Are we world partners? In that realm. And again, I haven't really noodled on that, but I mean, that would be my first kind of take on that. But it's very interesting. Again, the fact that we're even talking about that, I think, helps provide more depth to this, even though, you know, on the page, none of us were awed. It's not a, you know, a work of great renown, but it does, I think, hold a mirror up to our face to at least make us think about these things. But I don't know, and I don't even know if I've answered your question necessarily.
Yeah,
but.
Well, Steve, I think it's as good an answer as any. So was there anything, did anybody find anything particularly funny? I mean, obviously this is a comedy. Did it make anybody laugh?
I thought Randy was pretty funny. Although, you know, not a great guy.
Yeah,
that's Angie's
guy, kind
of current/ex-boyfriend, sort of bounces back and forth between those two states and pursues her and Boyd and just bad ideas one after the other. I mean, that was pretty funny to me.
Yeah. Anybody else? I'll say I thought the Mexicans cheering at Toby's funeral was pretty funny.
Yeah, that was good.
That's pretty sweet.
Yeah, I enjoyed that.
I have a question for the group. Who did you hate the most in the book? Which character did you hate the most? And who were you glad died?
Oh, what a good question. Well, I can start. I'm glad Henry died. He was a terrible, terrible person. And who did I hate the most? Probably Jim Dooney, the multi-billionaire capitalist, horrible, horrible person who, you know, tried to buy JCPenney's at the end so that Boyd could have his job back, which was kind of decent of him. But he was just an awful, you know, he was just the epitome of horrible late stage capitalist pig, I thought.
Yeah. I was going to say Henry. That was the first thing that came to mind. But I think, I mean, you know, to your point about Dooney, like, that's a good question. Like, should the bar be higher for billionaires? I mean, it should at least be the same height. But I think, you know, Dooney has a lot of instances where he sort of lowers the bar because he can, you know, where most of the other characters don't really have that luxury. So, yeah, he'd be a good candidate too.
Yeah. And even in that thread, let's say that Boyd was successful and killed himself on Dooney's doorstep. What do you think Dooney would have done?
Had someone clean up the body.
Exactly.
Right. I mean, that's what somebody, I forget who it was, probably Evelyn, suggested that he would have done.
So this act that Boyd created in his mind to really get back at Dooney would have not affected him in the least, other than a cocktail party story of you'll never believe, you know, Jim, tell the story about your ex-son-in-law. He's like, oh, you're not going to believe this. It's crazy.
Right.
But it wouldn't have affected him in any way, shape, or form, and certainly wouldn't have been the outcome that Boyd would have liked.
Yeah. Yeah. Jen, who was yours? Your question. Who'd you hate the most and who did you wish dead?
I think Toby, the sheriff.
He was terrible.
He was terrible. I do agree now that you brought up the billionaire. He's pretty bad. Yeah, Toby was my least favorite character and I was very satisfied when he died. I'd say that that's one way the book does succeed in introducing really characters that are intended to be hated by the reader, and you give them the gift of them dying or going to prison.
Yeah, except for poor Mel.
Yeah. Go ahead.
Oh, well, when you mentioned, you know, killing off characters too, it made me remember one thing that I did sort of, I don't know if it was something I liked about the book, but it was a new experience for me, and that was I had not read The Dust Jacket prior to reading the book, and maybe I missed that, you know, the whatever line it was that set the year that it took place, right? So I knew it was contemporary, but I didn't know exactly when. And so when COVID comes in about like a quarter of the way from the end of the book, I truly sort of re-experienced those first months of COVID, where it was just kind of came out of the blue and you're like, oh, shit. Like now this entire world that he's built just sort of came to a halt. Mm-hmm. And everyone stopped and the narrative momentum took a weird turn. I'm like, well, he kind of captured what it was like, you know, at that time.
Yeah.
You know, this is maybe the first book I've read that just sort of encompassed that much time and folded COVID into it to the extent that he did.
Yeah. Anyone want to hazard a guess as to, or a theory as to why Alvin took his own life? He didn't seem suicidal, but I guess Boyd probably didn't either.
No idea.
Minnesota winters.
That's probably a good guess.
Well, it was interesting. I mean, one thing he said to Boyd was that they were simpatico, but that the difference was that he could do it. Which actually seems to be a real kind of suicide thing that a lot of people kind of get to the point where they think they are interested in doing it or think they need to do it, but actually can't do it. But I don't know. It seemed like Boyd probably could do it. He was just foiled in his attempt to do it and then didn't. I don't know. So, okay. Let's kind of get to the end here. Let's talk about the ending. Anybody want to comment on the ending? Is Boyd done lying? Basically what happens is Boyd gets to go back to his old life. He gets to be the manager of JCPenney again and live in his little town in Northern California and not be married to Angie.
And who did he call?
Well, he called Peggy / Annie, or did she call him?
I thought he called her.
Yeah.
I think he calls her.
Okay.
Which she is... she's very interesting, but is, you know, the personification of two faces, right?
Yeah.
He was on the edge of disconnecting when she answered, "Innie," he said, "Innie's sleeping. This is Peggy."
Yeah.
She's
either
her it's a tow guy. Yeah. He'd like an escort, the two of you to dinner next month, a double date. Is that right? Yeah, it is. "Hang on," she said. "I'll see what I can do."
Right.
So he's still kind of embroiled in that life, I suppose, and is moving on with the lies.
She's either Finnish or Flemish, or from Eau Claire, Wisconsin.
Right.
Or more than one of those things.
Yeah. She's either underage or 20.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah. Anybody have anything to say about that ending?
It kind of said, I didn't hate Boyd throughout the book. He made a good companion in some ways, and I was interested in what happened to him, but that made me not like him. I was like, ew.
Yeah. I didn't think he was very annoying. Now, I did think Angie was really
annoying.
Angie
was intolerable.
Like when, a couple times when he just, you know, wanted her to just shut up, so did I.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah. Robin, any thoughts about the ending?
It makes me wonder whether this book has been optioned already. Because it just seemed very, I don't know, like the end of a Tarantino movie or something like that, you know, which, you know, to Steve's point, you know, he had a late in life kid who has to go to college. Like, movie money would be a great way to send your kid to college.
Yeah. Interesting.
I'm going to take out some loans.
Well, okay. Let's, you know, then as kind of a wind up here, would you recommend the book and would you look forward to that movie?
I would not. I hate to say it. I didn't hate the book. I mean, I really kept reading and I was interested to see what happened, but like Jen, there's zero chance of me rereading this book. So yeah, seeing a movie again, no. I would say read it if you like Tim O'Brien and you like Elmore Leonard and you want to see what like Tim O'Brien doing Elmore Leonard would be like. Maybe.
Right. And you want to give Tim O'Brien a few dollars because of how much he's meant to you over the years. Yeah. Jen?
I would not recommend it.
Yeah.
And I don't know that I'd want to see that movie either, although every Elmore Leonard movie I've seen has been fantastic.
Yeah, that's the thing.
So maybe it would turn out okay.
Yeah. Steve?
I'd only recommend it as a very different O'Brien from the others. And it's a, you know, it's a page turner. I think it'll get you at least thinking, but whether you like it or not, I mean, if you can sit there and be challenged by a book to at least think about what they're trying to do, I mean, on some level, that's a success. So again, I read this through the lens of I love Tim O'Brien, so yeah. I'm probably jaded with that. I would recommend it in as much as it's interesting and it wouldn't be a total waste of your time.
Yeah. Yeah, I thought it was a total waste of my time, unfortunately.
Twice.
I really wish I was so disappointed. And I was sad that I was so disappointed, but wow, I really, really didn't like this book. Okay, well, now we come to the point in the show where we talk about some other recommendations. I would love to know either if you have a recommendation or what was your favorite book of this year. Jen, you got one for us?
Yeah, I have both. I'm reading a book. I'm not done with it, but I really like it. It's called Notes on a Silencing. It's a nonfiction book about a girl who's sexually assaulted in boarding school. So it has a lot of the romantic boarding school stuff that we talked about liking. Right. Although
I have some questions for you.
Yeah, with a sad, a very sad, real thing that happened to her.
Yeah.
So you might enjoy it.
Yeah.
And then Rabbit Hutch was my favorite book of the year and the best book I've read in probably a couple of years. It really knocked my socks off and I loved it.
Yeah, Tess Gunty, The Rabbit Hutch. We talked about it a couple of shows ago. So, great recommendation. Robin?
a book that I kept wishing I was reading while I was reading this book. It's certainly not a plot-driven book at all, but it does take place in the Midwest in the 1980s, I think. It's The End of Vandalism by Tom Drury. Just a great book. I mean, great characters. It's entirely character-driven. And then the best book I read last year was actually, I think, published last year in 2022, but it was Yoga by Emmanuel Carrère. It's a memoir that starts out by being a book about yoga and ends up being about a lot of different things, a mental breakdown, working with refugees in Greece. He folds a lot of stuff into it, but it all somehow miraculously holds together.
Yeah. Wow. That sounds great. Yoga by Emmanuel
Carrère. Carrère, I think.
Yeah. Great. Thanks, Robin. Steve Woods, what do you got?
The last book I read before our assignment here was by Tom Hanks, that The Making of Another Major Motion Picture.
Oh, yeah. And
it was interesting, and it made me kind of hate him as much as I hate Steve Martin, I suppose, in that this guy can pretty much do anything.
Yeah.
The jealousy was running high. It was very entertaining.
Yeah.
Like a good beach read. But that was probably the last one that I read, and I've got to find something new now. So,
all right. So, thank you, Steve. That sounds like a great book as well. So I read some good novels in 2023, and I sort of rank them as I go along. So I went back and looked at my list, and I really only found one novel published in 2023 that was even in my top 10 favorite books of the year, and it was number 10. And that was Eleanor Catton's Burnham Wood, which I have to say I didn't like more the second time I read it, but I didn't like it less either. And I think if I went back and rejiggered my list, I'd probably jigger two or three novels from this year ahead of it. But in any case, so here are my recommendations. I think the best novel I read this year was Rebecca Mackay's The Great Believers from 2018, which I did enjoy really more than I Have Some Questions For You. And I thought that was a pretty enjoyable book. I know, Jen, you like that as well. But I thought The Great Believers was great. And I just finished, in fact, today I just finished a 2023 novel that I would put above Burnham Wood, and that is Chain Gang All-Stars by Nana Kwame Adjei-Brenya. It's a really sharp, dark comedy satire about the American prison system and capitalism and our culture of violence. It's a first novel by a really talented young writer. His 2018 short story collection, Friday Black, was also really, really great. So yeah, Chain Gang All-Stars, it makes a holiday, great holiday gift for people you love. And so that is it for us for 2023. You can find notes for this and all of our shows at Radio Free Book Club blog on medium.com. Please consider following us and dropping us a note on Facebook and stream the show wherever you listen to podcasts. We're always interested to hear what you think about the book and the show. Our show is produced for 99.1 WQRTLP by the amazing Oreo Jones. For Steve Woods, Jen Bingham, Robin Beery, and all the members of Radio Free Book Club, I'm Ken Honeywell. Thanks for listening, and join us next month when we'll be discussing R.F. Kuang's literary world thriller, Yellowface. Until then, read a book.